What's up, everybody? Welcome to the FPV News. Good to see you again, Blunty.
Yeah. Good to see you, Mr. Bardwell. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I just ate a gigantic burrito. And I just realized that I had lettuce in it. Now I'm worried I have lettuce in my teeth. It was a good burrito. Started grilling some burritos for my family today.
Nice. Burritos.
Real level up for the grilled burrito guy.
Yeah, I normally just do it on the pan.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, no, I don't mean literally on the grill.
Yeah, almost every single one I do is I just wipe the skillet and just drop it in the skillet. You know.
Real level up if you're a burrito person. Throw them on the
pan. Also holds it together. You know, sometimes you want to seal it together. So
I find think that you're works right. Pretty well. Yeah, kind of stiffens it up a little. Yeah. Just got a new hot sauce subscription box. Had a hot sauce, a monthly hot sauce subscription box for 2 years. My wife got it for me for Christmas. It's the best thing she ever got me. Well, and my children. we got another batch of news for the beautiful people. Going through the drone news, talking about the latest and the greatest. There were a couple questions before we dive in. There were a couple questions popping up in the chat. I answered a couple of them while the song was playing. I saw one of them from a kid named Stryker. Oh, he saw my reply. Great. This is not a Q&A stream. It's the news stream. So we're not going to spend too much. We will. I'm reading your comments, but we're not going to be doing Q&A. That's for, there will be a bonus Q&A stream tomorrow during the day.
That's true.
To make up for the missed Sunday stream. So if you want a Q&A, come along tomorrow. But we're going to dive right into the news and we'll get going with the very first item. A flying... Yeah. Drone umbrella.
Yes, this is probably one of the most submitted stories we've had in a while.
This is
really
an ordinary umbrella.
Hit the algorithm with this one.
Nope.
Yeah, so yeah, he built a drone umbrella. I mean, that's the basic premise you get right at the front, you know.
I mean, I love it. And we're not going to show too much of this guy's video because I always like to send clicks to the original creator and not steal their clicks. Hopefully he won't copy strike us. But I build stuff with 52,000 subscribers, had the idea to make a flying drone umbrella. And you can, that's a kind of cool, how did he do that shot? Wait a minute. Back up. He's got a freaking robot arm or a slider or something. That's a cool shot. Sorry, the video producer and me, just noticing. So if you've ever had the idea to have a... Yeah, see, it's been faked. That's what I was going to say. People have faked this before, but he actually went through with the real deal. And if you ever wanted to have flying blades of death over your head while rain was falling on them, now you can.
Yeah, I would definitely not advise... trying this yourself. This is definitely watch the video and see how it went sort of thing.
Yeah. That didn't go that well. I assumed it went great.
From a safety perspective, I think we would not consider it well.
It never was going. It's pretty cool though, because I don't know. Oh, Speedy B. Good choice. Good choice, Speedy B flight controller. Well done. A lot of people, you may remember, there was a flying phone, and it was fake. They made a whole how-to video showing, and they had these tiny little brushed motors, and they, glued them to the phone. And the idea was that your phone would be a selfie cam, your cell phone would just fly. Then it was faked. There was just no... In fact, I think Peter Schrippel did a video where he made the real version of the flying phone and talked about why it couldn't possibly be real. But, this is legit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
3D printed shit, right? I mean, that's so legit. So anyway, there's a link to this down. What? This must be a sponsor spot. Why are we seeing piano? There's a link down below to the video where he goes through the whole build. It's a really nice production. Actually, I'm not familiar with this channel. I have to check this guy out. I love channels like this where a sort of entertaining, charismatic guy builds something wacky. And I actually am not familiar with this one, so cool. Flying drone umbrella.
All right.
Crispy, Mark Rober didn't do the fake flying phone. No way. I mean, there's no way Mark Rober. He might have called it out. Black Jungle is calling out the fact that I'm more impressed with the guy's robotic slider than I was his time-lapse shot than I was with his actual drone umbrella. I know how right. He did the drone umbrella. Okay. Next up.
Yeah. Next up, something you asked for and somebody made a video about is the RadioMaster MT12 latency. You asked how it was compared to the normal lengths and what it, you know, what it could achieve and all that kind of stuff. So this guy went through and tested it, and this is some really good testing. He pulled out the oscilloscope and went through and reviewed a bunch of the different, you know, settings and features and links and stuff, and goes over, you know, kind of what he could link to based on his RC stuff that he has and what was supported and not. And, that sort of thing.
Yeah. This is a really cool video because a lot of people are asking, well, I don't want to put Express LRS in all my cars. I already own a bunch of cars. And I want to bind to the existing receivers that are in my cars, which the Express LRS, the RadioMaster 4-in-1 version can do some of that. But what receivers will it actually bind to? There are a lot that it won't bind to. So he actually bound it to, you can see over here on the right side of the screen in the chapter titles, he bound it to a bunch of receivers. Some of them were RadioMaster receivers, so obviously you would expect that to work. He tried a Traxxas TQ receiver. He tried a Spectrum DSM receiver, FlySky receiver. He tried a bunch of receivers because this guy has a bunch of cars and a bunch of receivers. And obviously this is not an exhaustive list, but did find some of them that would bind and then went through. And if we just look towards the end here, went through and showed the latency of all of them. And, you know, when I first heard this question, my first thought was, what do you care about latency? Like, you're driving you don't have an FPV video system adding latency. Like, you're just looking at the car and you're driving it. Like, how bad could the latency be? But, obviously people who are very, very serious about racing RC cars think that a latency of 35 milliseconds is unacceptable.
And, I think part of it too is just that, like, hey, let's compare to what's available, right? Yeah. So, like, his first thing on the list there is a Traxxas setup, which people would go, like, oh, this is a generic radio that you might even toss or whatever, right? The Traxxas TQ. Right. And it's at, you know, 13 ms, which is not bad for just like some link that nobody thinks is any decent. So, obviously, Express LRS gives you other benefits and stuff, but yeah, it's kind of neat to see all these compared and tested properly, and now we know.
And Express LRS did pretty well. Express LRS 333 hertz PWM, 5.4 milliseconds. Wait a second, that's the ERC1. Yeah, no. Why did 50 hertz PWM? Oh yeah, no, that makes sense. 18 milliseconds. That's not great. Some of them did really badly. The RadioMaster D8 or D16 module, very poorly. Doesn't surprise me, right? It seems like the really, really good ones were around 10 to 15 milliseconds. And then, you know, some of them were in like the 20 to 30 millisecond range you thought was terrible. That's pretty good. Pretty good. I really think that there should be, I mean, obviously this is, just wishing into the wind, as they say, but that's what I do. And sometimes things happen. I wish that there was more support for vehicle bind and flies, because there, quadcopters, like, how big of a fleet of quadcopters does the average person have? It's probably not 30 or 50, but there's a bunch of people out there who just have a ton of vehicles, cars, and they don't want to just put Express LRS in all of them. In addition, there's receivers that do things like receivers with gyros in them, which currently doesn't exist for Express LRS, or even some high-end Spectrum receivers that they're basically like flight controllers. They have advanced features, like they'll change the steering weight based on how fast the car is going. So when the car is going super fast, you don't just veer off to the side. And so there's all this incentive in the surface vehicle world to bind to existing receivers. And I'd love to see more progress from the multi-protocol project on getting that support. And I know that RadioMaster, obviously, that would only enhance the value of their radio if it could bind to more existing receivers.
I think the question is, does it need, are they still all using the same four chips, right? Or would you need more than the 4-in-1?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I sure don't know. Obviously, it's an open source project and it's, you know, people work for free. But like, if I was RadioMaster, it seems like it would be worth a significant investment, you know, in the multi-protocol project to get additional compatibility with existing ground receivers, because that would only increase sales of the MT-12. And I really think the MT-12 has potential to take a big bite out of the surface market. Kevin Sumner. Oh, that's too good of a question to pass up. Kevin wants to know if you can increase the expo on steering based on the throttle position to soften the steering at high speeds. 100% you can with HDTX. Part of the problem is that the throttle position doesn't actually tell you how fast you're going, right? I mean, there's some relationship there, but it doesn't necessarily tell you how fast you're going. The ideal would be to be talking to the ESC. Anyway. Very cool stuff and very good work from Jacob Scherer, who's been doing a ton of work with the MT-12, and there's a link to his video down in the video description as well.
Yep. All right, next up, we've got a community member, a little spotlight we're doing called Mark My Spots. This is not what you might think from the name of the link, but it is a neat idea. Otherwise, it's by Cucumber Cool in the community. And basically, you can use this to create a spot map that then you can use. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. So like, this isn't like every spot everybody's created, right? But you can come in, type in a name and create a map. Mm-hmm. And then you get a link with your map name. You can even add an edit token to let only people you know edit it, you know, that they can type
interesting.
In.
Interesting.
And then you just share that map around and people can add to that map if there's no edit token, or they have to type in the token to edit it. And they can see all the spots that that group of people, those people that are sharing the map together, mm-hmm. you know, that they want to see. So this maybe you don't want your spots to be public, but you want to say like, everybody in this private group of 400, I'm going to share my link to you. And now you can all see my spots, you know, something like that.
And of course, the creator knows all your spots. Aha! I found the angle.
Right.
So the idea is that you can create a shareable map. Because obviously, like, I have a Google Maps. You know, in Google Maps, I just have, like, a playlist. I don't know what the hell they call it. Where I just tag spots, you know, and things that are relevant. And I don't know if you could share that very easily. The idea is that you can have this shareable map. And multiple people can have edit permission if you give them this token. So that's pretty cool. Very cool. I guess the problem with existing spot maps has been that a lot of people don't want to give out their spots. They don't want to publicize them.
Presumably. I think there's a mix of people don't want to give out spots. And like publicly list on a database where they're going to be flying if they're not really supposed to be there, or maybe it's questionable, right? Like, and there's also like, there's multiple websites like that and you have to register and then you have to set up an account and you have to, or you have to like, you know, you got to put it there and maintain it. You got to get everybody to use the same thing. So maybe this will be a little easier to minimize it. You know, it's not going to be like every spot ever, but I think maybe for small communities, this might be a better option than some of those other choices.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you very much to Mark My Spots. That's the project. That's not the creator. Mark Frank. No?
No, Cucumber Cool.
Thank you very much to Cucumber Cool for making that.
Yeah.
When I saw that there was a new motor database, my first thought was, is someone other than Chris Rosser picking up the gauntlet of doing motor testing? And not that I have anything against Chris Rosser.
Yeah, that's not.
It's always good to have somebody duplicating the results. Go ahead, sorry.
Right, and that is not what this is. This is instead a motor database project. This guy wanted to share this. Mark Frank. He's created a GitHub project that is attempting to categorize and list every stat about every motor that's available.
That's kind of cool.
Basically, if you go through, you know, if you can add them, hopefully, you know, you'll get like every single piece, item, and dimension. I don't know that things like, I don't know that price is going to be super helpful, but there are, you know, that might change over time and stuff. But things like, if you can get things like, you know, the bearing types and bell types, and like as you can collect this info about different motors, I think this could be a pretty helpful thing to go like, what titanium bearing motors, or, you know, like what motors have this alloy, or like things like that, if it can really get filled out.
That's a lot of characteristics.
Yes. So, yeah, this seems like a cool project. We wanted to go and let you know about it. Maybe you can contribute or know someone who can to this project. And you can do that through GitHub.
Oh, well, that's... I'm out. I can do four things on GitHub. And my so here's how I use GitHub to update my presets database. I haven't actually updated my Betaflight presets in a while. But what I do is I launch the GitHub command line. And then I go up arrow four times to get to the last command. And then I hit enter. And I do up arrow four times to get to the last command. And I hit enter. And I go through the steps of like merging and committing. And if I ever lost that, I'd be done for.
Yeah.
But if you do know how to use GitHub, you can update this information.
I mean, this is really the easiest way you can use GitHub. I mean, this is like the easy, if you wanted to try to learn how to use GitHub, submitting a motor to this might be a good way to do that, because this is very simple. You're literally just doing a local clone of the repo, you're editing the JSON, and you're repushing it with a pull request. So it's like super simple. This might be a good way to kind of get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, git-a-pull-branch- Anyway,
you don't have to do any of that. You can download the local GitHub program on your PC, and you don't have to learn
how to
do
it. We're not doing it with a GUI. No, sir. Yeah. No.
Yes.
Maybe that's my problem. When I was like, hey, I want to do some Git stuff, people were like, don't use the GUI. No, only losers use the GUI. And I was like, okay, I'm a big boy. Captain Bry, how did you know I was flashing a Raspberry Pi? How did he figure that out?
I don't know.
He's right. Why was I flashing a Raspberry Pi?
Must have had something open or running.
I guess. It's not a big secret, but it is interesting to me when my information leaks. How did he figure that out? Oh, was it in my GitHub? Oh, it was. It was in my GitHub history, probably. All right. All right, guys. Next up.
All right, next up, our first cinematic of the week is going to be this drone lava video.
Should we just launch right into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. As always, we will not be showing the music. And normally what I say is we're only going to show just a brief little taste of it because I don't want to spoil the whole thing. But I think this is just being a short. It's going to be less than a minute. I'm not sure how much we could. Ah, no, it got me. So this is at McGee, three E's, and it looks like they got a little ding by the lava, but still managed. They're still flying pretty good, honestly.
Yeah, if you guys watch this later, you can hear the audio, and it's definitely struggling at the end, but he does make it back. But yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anybody get hit like that, lose control of the drone for a minute, and then make it out of lava, so that's pretty cool.
The stabilization was really probably helping a lot. Wow. Oh, a little loose there. Man. Oh, did you see that volcano behind him? Jeez. Dude. Volcanoes and drones. So hot right now. Literally. Oh, yeah, cool stuff. I can't believe it recovered. Can't believe it didn't just fall into the fall. How did the motor start spinning again? That's amazing. Well done.
Yeah.
We've got some events. Events that you might want to go to.
I'm sorry. One more.
You did it. This is your fault. You clicked through ahead too fast.
All right.
I blame you.
Next up, our other cinematic of the week. We just wanted to let you check out a little bit of this Norton Motorcycle FPV fly-through. This is a fly-through of a company. And we get some of these back and forth in different ways. Yeah. But I thought this was pretty well done, and I figured we would at least share it. So okay. You guys can check this out.
So this one's 4 minutes long. I'm going to let this one play a little bit because this being an advertisement for Norton Motorcycles, I don't think they'll mind if we play their advertisement on our stream, as opposed to being like, no, give the views to the original channel. Like, if you're watching this and going, eh, that looks nice, then you go buy a Norton motorcycle. And let's see. Oh, I'm always looking. Oh, I'm looking for the speed ramps. See, you had that nice little fly through of the little gap, and we just speed ramp through it. I guess you got to do what you got to do. It's an okay move. We're flying through here. That's not that interesting. It's a little like I just have to get to point A from point A to point B. I like these moves there. It is really hard to make moves like that smooth. Very hard to do those changes in speeds and keep them smooth. I feel like the pilot is doing a great freaking job. Like, a lot of these moves are incredibly well done.
I think it's been a one take. There might be some kind of magical editing stuff. But
it's possible. It feels like it's a one take. They want you to think it's a one take, that's for sure.
Right.
Nice. I don't think the speed ramps are too distracting.
No, I think it's on purpose to get you, you know, he flies well enough that, yeah, the speed ramps don't really do too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to overdo the speed ramps, for example. Not bad. I think there's a, like, I always struggle, I say I always, not like I do these very often, but when I find myself thinking about how to do these, I struggle. There's like a desire to do a one take because that's just what you do. But at the same time, like, what serves the subject and serves the audience best? So if you have a segment where you're flying somewhere kind of boring, just for the sake of making it a one take, should you have put a cut there? You know, like if we compare this, let's take a second. I think we're a little bit ahead on the clock, Blunty. If we compare this to the Gigafactory fly through, that was done by what was the guy's name? He's the DJI Ferdinand. Ferdinand. I can't remember his last name. Creative director at DJI. Like, I remember this being an amazing fly through, but I think it had cuts, and I think they served the subject really well. I don't know if I'm misremembering. Again, very, very nice use of speed ramping. There was a cut, right? So, like, you can have a one take and be super impressed by the one take, but then you gotta find ways to keep it interesting. Sheesh. There's a little bit of wobbles here, but my God, given what he's doing, I kind of forgive it. Right?
Yeah, right. You're trying not to get, like, crushed.
Shut the hell up. It's so tight. This is such a great shot that, like, this is like a shot that it would be impossible to get, because, like, a human could not go in there for risk of getting crushed. And I think there was a cut. I think it's really an example of how drones can really open up possibilities. But, yeah. I don't know. I don't think this would have been better if it was a one-er, because I think the stuff that they're showing us is too separated. But either way, great, great work. Great work.
Yeah.
And thank you to whoever the pilot was. We don't know who the pilot was, do we?
On this Norman motorcycles fly through, let's see.
Any idea? Maybe we should shout out the pilot. Since as FPV pilots ourselves, that's who we really care about. I'm sure they didn't.
Yeah, it does not say in credits.
Alrighty. Well, whoever you were, that's some hella good flying and it's a pretty good edit too. And for all the, like, mild sort of commentary on the one-er, I'm sure that the customer came to you and said, we want it to be a one-er. And you're like, okay, I'm going to make the best of it. Cuts loose continuity, says DFGA. Maybe Norton wanted to show it's all in the same building. I don't know. Fife. I mean, it's true, but, like, how much is the audience, how much does the viewer care about that continuity? Like, I'm going to assume that it's all in the same building, unless you show me otherwise. I think that you're more likely to lose the audience's interest by doing something boring for 5 seconds than you are to, like, have them be, I don't know where in the building I am. Like, well, I don't know where, yeah.
I think that's why we see a lot of these do action shots and have audio escapes, right? Like, because mm-hmm. you want to entertain, you want to like have a thing to do while you're flying through the bowling alley, you know, okay, here's yeah. a bunch of lanes, but here's people bowling and here's the strike sound and we're going to go down the lane and we're going to see the pins move. And like, mm-hmm. you know, all the, you have all these moving pieces so that as you do a one take like that, or what you make look like a one take, like you're actually engaging the viewer, I think, right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like you said, otherwise you're just, like, flying through boring stuff where you're, like, speed ramping right. giant chunk.
So you can't, like, if, and we're getting into sort of creative decision-making here, but, like, you can't wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to do a one-er, right? You have to, if you do, then you have to make sure that every part of the shot is serving the goal of the video. And not the sort of self-indulgent desire on your part to do a one-er. The audience doesn't care if you did a one-er unless you're a film nerd like me and you go, oh, that was a one-er. Good job. I liked it.
Or you do something that tells the audience member and reminds them it's a one-er. Like you follow one right. person through the whole thing right. or like, right. like there's ways to do it, right? Like the Red Bull downhill stuff we see, like, yep. you know, But yeah, I think in a lot of times, like you're saying, just the idea that flying through a factory is one take is not going to impress upon people in most cases, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. So don't be a slave to the one-er, I think is what I'm saying. Just yeah. because CineWhoop shots are often one-shots, and because it is, if you can do a good, interesting one-er, it is a real impressive move, right? And so you're showing your skill, but, you know, you got to be able to pull it off. And it's hard. Okay, moving on.
All right, moving on. We got some events to tell you about. We want to let you know about all these events that are going on. We got 4 events, most events we've had in quite a while. So
it's the winner.
Up.
Why are there so many up. Events?
Well, because there's Whoop events and oh, yeah, right. other stuff going okay. on, too.
Makes sense.
So the first one is Booktopia 2024, and we already told you it sold out right when it released. Like, you can't go, if you know what I mean? But you might want to watch it, right? And you can do that. We've got a link to their YouTube channel where you can watch the qualifiers and all the races for Booktopia, and that's going to start on the 13th of January. So, yeah, if you want to get out there and watch some whooping. Get some whoop action going on. Watch some of the best whoopers in the country. Duke it out. You can do that on Whooptopia's YouTube channel, which will be Perspective Image.
Okay, well, moving on. We'll let everybody know if I get an answer to that. Next up, there All is right. an event. The Orlando yeah, next up Rotor Racers.
Nope, you skipped one. We got the Rippies.
Stop it. Stop doing that to me. I see which one you've clicked on, and I think it's the one we just did. This hasn't happened in so long. What's going on?
We don't ever do the news anymore.
We're out of practice.
It's been too long. Okay.
Okay, so, Dragon.
Yeah, next up we've got the Rippies, January 27th. You can tune in at 5:30 p.m. Well, I'm not sure actually what... But this is where this is, but this is FPTV, Sean the Don, created this, to honor Sean's legacy. FPTV keeps doing it. This is the 4th annual Rippies event that they're going to do. And you can check out their award show for pilots that they're going to do.
Oh, it's at the Atlanta Theater. Wow. That's no joke. That's like a real thing. Very cool. Pretty actually cool got stuff. To meet him. I got to meet him. At the last Rampage that he went to, did a little interview with him, and he's a pretty cool guy, and a lot of contributions to the world of FPV. Very, very, it's a shame that he's not with us anymore.
Yep.
Oh, hang on.
All right. Next up, we've got an event in Orlando we want to let you know about. Orlando Rotor Racers. This is the 10th anniversary. On January the 27th and the 28th, there's going to be a multi-GP race on Saturday with cash and prizes, and a freestyle competition on Sunday with cash and prizes at the FPV Oasis track down in Orlando. So you want to go hang out with people and maybe get in on a race, you could win some prizes or get in a freestyle competition. So pretty cool stuff.
Okay, just keep. What's next?
All right, next up is the drone race at the Air Force Museum. This will be the 5th annual drone race at the Air Force Museum. If you don't know, this is a whoop race, and we got a video for you, so you can check it out and see what it's all about.
Oh man, this place is so freaking cool.
This is in March, so you've got plenty of time to sign up. March 1st through the 5th. Tickets, I believe, are on sale. Let's see.
Look at this. And this isn't the race. This is just a dude flying around.
Yeah, tickets go on sale January the 20th. This is in Ohio. Dayton, Ohio.
Could go over by flight test. That's near flight test, isn't it? Or is Dayton in the south?
Not sure. Respect. Not up on my Ohio geography.
Well, never going to win at GeoGuessr, Blunty.
That's true.
Are we not? Can we see? Can we see a racetrack? Hang on. Drone Race Air Force Museum. Like, show me actual race footage. Is there any? No. The actual course is so freaking cool. I'm not going to sit here forever and search for it, but I do wish I could kind of find it. Championship. There we go. Weebleed presents the championship. Check out this freaking course. Oh my god, when does the racing start? There we go. Oh, right. It looks like shitty analog. Well, it's still pretty cool. Jeez, the gates are so small. Why you guys make the gates so small? It just makes it hard for the fly through them.
Small drone, small gate.
Whoop racing was supposed to be fun and easy.
Fun, yes. Easy?
Accessible. Whoop racers are so stinking good. Mm. Awesome. 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 Wait a second. Just one. All right. Well, whoever you are out there, eventually you'll probably find out you were talking to me on a stream and know that you comported yourself well. And hopefully you found that funny, not creepy. What's next, Blunty?
All right. Next up is our only real news story today. You know, we've got a bunch of other stuff we wanted to share with you, but this one's been going around a lot and is going to be, I would say, a large impact on our hobby and the perception of our hobby. And that is that Kyiv in the Ukraine is saying that they are attempting to produce 1 million FPV drones next year for the war, of course.
Yeah. That's
a lot of drones.
Yeah. I've heard numbers publicly quoted that they were going through something like 15,000 a month. Hold on, let me pull my calculator out here. 15,000 times 12, that's 180,000 a year. So they are saying that they're basically going to 5x their consumption of FPV drones.
Yeah, it's always hard to verify like what sources are. One of the reasons we don't do a lot of these stories is because there's a lot of hearsay in these situations. Mm-hmm. But like one of the tweets that's featured here says that only in December, Ukraine produced more than 50,000 FPV drones. So I'm not sure how accurate that is, but you know, that would get closer to that number. Obviously we're not there yet, but yeah, this yeah. will, this will definitely have an impact worldwide on the view of FPV in general, as it is enabling this. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that it will have an impact on the perception as more and more videos of drones being used to do things get out there. I always, whenever I see these pictures, I always start trying to identify the hardware. Like these blue gummies, I think, are Matek. The frame looks like a GEP-RC Mark IV, I think. Sorry, just the freaking nerd, the drone nerd in me. I don't recognize the motors. Can't read the logo on the motors. Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to say, one of the other things they mentioned in this article, and I've seen it a couple different places, is that they're also using modified LoRa kits to broadcast at like low 800 megahertz range, so they can't be jammed with 900 megahertz jamming. Hmm. And they showed some pictures of some of those lower in the article. So those really? Are Russian, Russian made. They're calling Hermes anti-interference.
Radio. I did see this. Yeah. The idea, well, we know that the LoRa chip that's used by ExpressLRS and Crossfire can operate in different frequency bands. And, you know, we just happen to use 2.4 gig or 900 megahertz because that's where regulations let us use it. But, that in software, it can be moved. So that's very interesting. The big question that comes to my mind is, like, people are like, what does this mean for the perception of drones? And that's a valid question, right? But the question that I have is, like, what does this mean for the price of things that we're going to buy? And I saw somebody on Facebook talking about this, and I don't know if this person is full of shit or not, but they said a lot of these drones, maybe all of these drones, are using Crossfire. And so that would mean that TBS is selling, well, hundreds of thousands of Crossfire receivers, if that were true. And then they were like, I hope this means that the price of Crossfire equipment will come down. And how do you get from here to there, where a massive increase in demand for a product results in a decrease in price? That doesn't make any damn sense.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder how much. I mean, I know that, like, the price of groceries has gone up significantly in the last 3 years. And I don't think that has anything to do with, like, drones. But when I see that the price of flight controllers, ESCs, motors, etc., has gone up, and some people say, well, that's just inflation, everything's more expensive. There's clearly truth to that. But then I have to wonder how much of it is increased demand from places like this. And as soon as demand goes up, price goes up. I don't know. But
yeah,
it seems like if you're hoping for prices to go down, that's not going to happen. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Anyway, there you go. A million drones. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember that video came out with the iFlight drones in the background of the Russian soldier? And I looked at that and I thought, that's a lot of drones. Like, is it even realistic that iFlight, they were iFlight drones. Is it even realistic that iFlight could have made that many drones? You know, but if they're like, yeah, we're going to churn out a million drones a year. I mean, I guess that the scale of the numbers we're seeing is, of course, it could all be bullshit. We should all, you know, you never know. Governments say a lot of things when they're at war. So who knows?
Very true.
Anyway, let's see.
All right.
Yeah. Well,
this is the time where we normally do a check on super chats.
Yeah. Let's see. Viewer activity. There have been no super chats.
No super chats. All right.
No super chats.
Well, this is where we move into our next segment.
Oh yeah,
and our last segment of the show. That's It's Barely News, where we talk about stories that maybe weren't big enough to really put in the main news, but we wanted to make a list of them, and sometimes we talk about them for longer than main stories, and sometimes we don't. So, hey, it's our show. All right, first up, somebody messed up at a concert in the UK, and I think they were pretty nice to him, to be honest with you. Somebody flew a DJI drone at a Fatboy Slim concert. If you don't know, Fatboy Slim is a DJ in the UK. And he took off with the drone above a crowd and then flew it directly down into the crowd by accident.
That's the part of the story that I love. Is like he just like fessed up. He was like, yeah, I put it in sport mode and I meant to like climb up and away. And I don't know, I just pushed the joystick the wrong way and flew it straight down.
Sounded like he like had it upside down or something. He's like, I did the exact opposite of what I wanted to do. It's like, oh my God.
I don't know. But what a fucking, I don't, I'm sorry, apologize. What a freaking loser, just like, I guess I'm going to put my drone up and not know what I'm doing. Crashing. Yeah. He crashed on stage and almost hit Fatboy Slim, which I don't, that would have been a terrible loss. Terrible loss. The day the music died. But so he got $1,100 fine and he got his drone back, which I think is very generous.
That's the thing about this. Yeah, I think compared to a lot of the things we've seen happen and what he could have gotten, which is essentially an unlimited fine in this case because of the way the convictions work out, and up to 2 years in custody, and said they just gave him $1,100 in fines and said, be on your way. Which
I mean, for an average person, for most people, $1,100 worth of fine, it was in pounds. That's a lot of money. I mean, most people aren't going to shrug that off.
Still a lot easier than spending 2 years in jail.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So, I mean, I just think, like, yeah, there's a lot of things that, I mean, I don't know. For being that dumb, he got away very lucky to me. That's what I would say.
I mean, he didn't actually hurt anybody. I feel like that has to play into it. Like, if you, what's the worst that could have happened? It's probably, like, nobody was going to die. I don't know. I think he got the slap on the wrist he deserved and probably won't do it again, although who the frick knows? All right, well, don't do that.
All right, don't do that. Next up, the FAA has made a Freya map. They've added the Freyas to their main map. I know it only took January. We're in January, and it started in September, but we've got a Freya map.
We complained about this.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Like, less than a month ago.
Yeah.
So what you're saying... Once again, we complained about something, and then it got fixed.
Yeah, realistically, I think what happened here is that Alex Suarez built a Freya map and then was bugging the FAA so much that they were like, yeah, we should probably put our Freya map out. But either way, the FAA has an official Freya map. This is all the Freyas that they have in their database, so we don't have to like be getting a list from them and trying to update a thing or whatever. This is literally all the Freyas that they have in their database. So... you want to know if there's a free in the area, this is the official way to find out where the Freyas are.
Okay, good.
And yes, a lot of them are weird. If you look at them, the boundaries don't make sense sometimes. Things they cover shouldn't be allowed. Some of them are in parking lots where you couldn't have things or over buildings. But hey, you know, this is the map. So at least we got a map. That's what I'll say.
All right. Good. Thank you, FAA. I mean, F you also, but thank you for the one thing you did that, I don't know, it's like,
anyway. Yeah. All right.
And
other things you shouldn't do, we've got another drone story about a person who did a dumb thing with a drone. In this case, in Daytona Beach, Florida, a helicopter collided with a drone. At about 180 meters of elevation, I believe. Fortunately, the helicopter was able to land. NTSB is still doing the report over it, so there's nothing really official. 180 feet, sorry, not meters. Yeah.
I'm not trying to
like
split hairs, but that's a big difference.
Sure. Regardless, it's within the, you know, as a pilot, your goal is to always avoid all air traffic. So,
yeah. This is a tricky one to me, Blunty. This is a tricky one. And the reason I say that is the standard in the U.S. is that unmanned aircraft must always see and give way to manned aircraft, period. No exceptions, everything.
Why you have a spotter? Yeah.
Okay, fine. So let's assume, for the sake of argument, that this pilot was doing everything right, that they had a fully caffeinated spotter looking everywhere. This helicopter was flying at 180 feet, which, by the way, it has the legal right to do, according to a cursory search on Reddit that I did after learning about this incident.
It's a tourist helicopter. Right? They give tours in the area.
They're allowed to be flying at this altitude.
I believe this was on the tour flight path. That's my understanding.
But I've seen situations where by the time you hear a helicopter, I wasn't flying at the time. It's just out in public. You hear a helicopter, you look up, and then by the time you see it, vroom, it's gone. And I thought to myself, no matter how alert my spotter was, there is no effing way I could have if I was at 200 feet or 300 feet, there's no way I could have responded to that in the time that I humanly became aware of it. And so I'm like, on the one hand, it's my responsibility to see and avoid. But on the other hand, like, it's physically impossible under some situations where no one is breaking a rule to see and avoid.
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all. I don't think the helicopter that's 180 feet in the air, you can't see before it's going to hit your drone. I don't believe that. I think the guy was looking at his tablet. He didn't have a spotter and he got hit by the helicopter because that's what happens.
You're 100% right. Like, that's correct. Probably what happened. I do think that there's situations where the realistic reaction time to the awareness that a helicopter's coming your way is short enough that it's very difficult to take action. And of course, the FAA's position will be, well, then just don't fly. Just don't fly. Or have ADS-B receiver on your drone like DJI does. Mm. So the other angle of this that I think is super interesting, well, this is hardly barely news. I actually have a lot to say. Helicopter's fine.
Yep.
Hit the rotor. The story says the helicopter's rotor blade was damaged, which was estimated to cost at least $60,000. Now, I'm not like belittling $60,000, and I'm not saying, oh, well, therefore it's fine to just chuck things into the rotor of a helicopter. But I would like to point out that we've had a lot of speculation in the past. Oh, what would happen? What would happen? And some people are like, oh, a helicopter would instantly explode into a million pieces. And here we have the first example I'm aware of where a helicopter hit a drone, not with its fuselage, but with its rotor, and then like was like, oh, shit, and made a landing. And everyone didn't die. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think, I understand what you're saying, but like, this is one test case. And like, that doesn't make any sense. I think that's a bad faith argument. Right, like
I'm not. No. Don't overgeneralize it. Sorry, you've gone one step too far. I'm not saying like I said. That's why I said. I'm not saying let's just chuck drones into helicopter rotors. I don't want to over extrapolate, but I would like to just point out that we now have a data set of one, where in the real world a helicopter hit a drone with its rotor and something happened, and I think it's interesting to have actual data as opposed to pure speculation.
All right, fair enough.
Still don't like it. Okay. Excuse me. So.
All right.
Next up.
Next up. This is interesting. I don't know. Well, so China has a company called Ehang. And they are claiming that they're the first to take passengers on autonomous eVTOL. So we've talked before about eVTOL. eVTOL is like, electronic vertical takeoff and landing. Essentially, the goal is to advance air mobility, to transport people around. And these are autonomous transports without pilots, which in the U.S. We certainly have not been doing. But China says they have done it multiple times. They took multiple spectators and government officials on this pilotless eVTOL, and they claim this thing can take two people with luggage, 30-kilometer round trip, totally autonomous. So this is their first step in testing it, and they claim they're going to fire it up. You know, get these going in the world pretty quickly here. So,
an advantage of not having a pilot is that you have room for one more passenger, I suppose.
Yep. Absolutely.
And also, you don't lose a skilled employee if it crashes.
Also true.
You just lose two customers. All right, Black Jungle, you got me. That's All right, yeah, you got me, buddy. That's a good one. Excuse me. All right, one more. Oh, you did this just
real
for
quick.
Me.
Hold on, yep. Real quick. So one IFPV asked a great question. Are these just for show? What are the economics of these? Can an actual company survive doing this with just regular passengers? Or is this a VIP type of thing? There are a lot of companies with a lot of stake in something called advanced air mobility, which is different versions of 1, 2, 5, 10 passenger vehicles that would operate similar to a private helicopter scaling to a flying bus, right? That's the idea here. There's a bunch of different companies doing different things and different ideas, but there are large aircraft companies. I believe Boeing has a whole thing out about how they plan to do this. They think that they're going to have basically hubs where you go, you park in a garage, you walk upstairs, you get on the thing, and you go where you need to go. And it'll sort of be like a remote taxi service style thing. And I don't know. This may be like drone delivery where we see a long time. It doesn't actually pan out. The money's not worth it. I do think this is more feasible than drone delivery, but the whole problem they're having is customer safety and piloting and insurance and logistics. And like, there's all these pieces, right? And something we've seen come out of the safety concerns and other things in UAS legislation has been this push for advanced air mobility to slide into the legislation. That's where we see a lot of commercial interest currently trying to push that stuff. So I will say, regardless of whether it's worth the money makes sense or not, we're going to see a very similar push to the delivery push, where we're going to see a ton of this AAM over the next 5 to 10 years attempt to do this. And whether it works or not, I think we'll see that work out logistically. Right?
That's the piece. This comment from Dreamfree FPV says, I personally see advanced air mobility as unviable, yet forcing both Hobby RC and Man General Aviation out of the sky while they figure it out. And then maybe they'll get to the end of this. They'll have sucked up all their VC money and wasted all their shareholder money. And, you know, then they'll be like, ah, I guess it didn't work. We'll just use helicopters, I guess. You know, so we don't know if this is going to turn into the next big thing or if it's going to be a fad that sort of peters out, kind of like cryptocurrency.
Yeah. But I can definitely tell you they're going to try to do this, right?
Yeah.
Like they're going to push a lot of money.
Yeah.
Pushing to make this happen. And this is, I'll tell you already, you know, we've discussed this before. It's been said many times. You might hear this for the first time here, but the network remote ID that we pushed back and did not get for the last remote ID push, in the next 5 to 10 years, another reason is for this AAM, we're going to get network remote ID so that everybody can see where your drone is in the air at any time over the internet. It's just, unfortunately, I'm just letting you know ahead of time, it's going that way. I would be amazed if we don't have network remote ID in the next 5 to 10 years.
And I think that if people don't know your history and your connections, they may not realize that this is not just idle speculation, but that you are definitely a guy with your finger on the pulse of where
regulation we can see
is
it.
Going. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you could see it when the conversations that happen, right?
When you say we can see it, you don't mean we, the hobbyists looking at public statements. You mean you, the FPV Freedom Coalition, who is in phone calls and meetings with people within the FAA.
Yeah. I think if you went back and looked at any publicly available information, like the discussions that happen inside of like the final rule document, right. Or in these other work groups that are publicly available, you can dig it out. But yes, part of that is me being involved in this to know that without having to dig, right. Is that this will happen as soon as it can happen, it will happen. And the reason for it not happening before was technology. They said they weren't ready to scale up into a system to track for the whole US. But part of that will be broadcast remote ID tracking, local tracking, building databases, understanding how all the stuff will work, and then formulating that into a network remote ID solution. I would be shocked if it wasn't. So I just want to, you know, hold on to your butts or whatever. Like that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, that's a hell of a note to finish on. I think we need a nice heartwarming story. We got a couple super chats have come in. We'll get those.
Okay.
Should we get those before or after the heartwarming story?
Let's get the super chats out of the way, and then okay. We'll finish off.
We'll do a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lee Trin, for a $5 super chat. Why is it important to have ultra low ESR capacitor for 6S drones? Let's take, so again, this is not a Q&A stream, but for a super chat, we'll make an exception. The first question is, why is it important to have a capacitor at all? And it's important to have a capacitor because there is a lot of electrical high frequency noise on a drone. And that electrical high frequency noise can mess up the gyro. That's the short version. The gyro is a very sensitive device. It's detecting rotation. And if it is given a noisy electrical signal, it produces noisy data, and that makes your quadcopter fly bad. So having that capacitor filters that high frequency noise and gives you cleaner gyro data. That's the shortest, most concise, not diving into too many rabbit holes version of it. Why is it important that the capacitor be low ESR? The equivalent series resistance of the capacitor. So a capacitor has a resistive characteristic, and resistance means that when current flows through the capacitor, heat is given off. That energy is turned into heat and the capacitor gets hot. The problem with a drone capacitor is that there's so much high frequency noise that there is a lot of back and forth current flow, right? And so if you had high resistance, you would get a ton of heat buildup as that current goes back and forth. So we need low ESR. That's the shortest version of that I can make for you here on the stream. 1UP87, thank you for a $5 super chat. I saw Chris Rosser vid. He said, don't change motor direction in Betaflight. Use BL Heli. Why? Is that interesting? The answer is that Betaflight 4.4.2 has a bug where the motor wizard doesn't work. And so the workaround is to use BL Heli. Betaflight 4.5, God, I hope they fix the bug. I guess I haven't verified that in any meaningful way, but God, I hope they fix the bug. And if you're in Betaflight 4.4.5, just use the Betaflight motor direction. I don't see a reason to go to BL Heli if you're on Betaflight 4.5. Okay. Heartwarming palate cleanser for the end of the stream.
All right. So we've done a couple of these stories, but this will be another one, because it's great. And this is a thermal drone, a very good thermal drone, looking for a dog out in the field. And they're doing triangulation and scanning up and down and looking all over for them, trying to spot them. I'm always impressed by how good these guys are at like using these things and spotting and zooming and referencing and stuff.
I mean, is that the dog right there? Have they got him zeroed in? Oh my God, it is. It's the dog. Oh, that's a nice night camera too. Oh, this is not a cheap drone.
Not a cheap drone. That's good.
Yeah. Do we know what drone they're using?
It's probably in the description. Let's see.
Hmm.
Yeah, they've got a list of drones they use. So
ag drones. Nice.
Looks like they're using a Matrice 30T.
Yeah, okay. Nice. That comes with its own IR camera, if I remember correctly. Drone deer recovery. Okay, so these guys find deer that got shot and ran away. But now...
Yeah, we didn't know the story about it, but they just got in trouble in one area for that. Some guy who like was dispatched through them. I think it's really dumb, but basically it's illegal to use drones for hunting stuff in a lot of places. So they consider that even though it helped to recover the carcass, they used it in the proliferation of hunting, and they like got the guy in trouble for using the drone, which seems really bad. It's like, I'm trying to be a responsible hunter and collect a corpse. It's like, anyway.
Corpse? Carcass?
Carcass.
Some part of me wanted you to say carcass instead of corpse, and I'm not sure what the difference is, but if you told me I was going to eat a carcass, I'd be like, that makes sense. And if you told me I was going to eat a corpse, I'd be like, I don't think so. All right. Well.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Look at this good boy. Look at this. Oh, he's so worried. Oh, now we got a little tail wag. Oh, he found his owner. He's still a little worried, though. Oh, yeah. Niz a happy dog. Yeah, we found him. He was in the field. Yeah. See? Drones are positive and helpful and help find dogs. That's all they do. Black Juggle asks if corpses are usually human. I think so. English is his second language, so I'm curious about the distinction. Corpse, a dead body, especially of a human being rather than an animal. Yes. So.
Interesting way to say that.
It's just the definition. Carcass
especially is of a, right?
Like, yeah. Right, like it could be an animal, but it probably isn't. A carcass is the dead body of an animal. So a carcass could not be a human.
Fair. Like if you said cadaver, like that's a person. Right?
That's clearly a person.
Yeah.
Cadaver. A corpse. Cadaver is a synonym for corpse.
Fair enough. Okay.
Alrighty, well, glad we got
that. Left that in a light note.
Yeah. I thought we wanted a palate cleanser. Alrighty, guys, that's going to do it. We will not see you next week.
That's true. It's going to be the 30th of January when we're back. And you're going to be back on the 29th of January for your next Q&A. Oh, I'm sorry. We're back tomorrow for a Q&A. We'll do
tomorrow, bonus Q&A. Make up
for the Sunday stream we missed. We'll do a Q&A. What time is that going to be?
2 p.m.
Eastern. 2 p.m.
And if you're not sure, just go to my live streams page on my YouTube channel, and it's right there, and it'll just show what time it starts at your local time.
Yeah, and then you're gonna have a big hiatus. We'll be back the 29th with the Q&A and the 30th with the news.
I would argue it's just 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks.
That's fair.
It's not my biggest hiatus ever.
It's very true.
We've reset the perspective on what a big hiatus is. All right. Okay, we will see you there. See you guys in the next one. Bye, everybody.
Yep. Bye, guys.